This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is...
Sesame, Sunshine, and Carta.
You are my sunshine.
Thank you.
My only sunshine. You make me happy.
Please don't.
When skies are gray.
Yeah.
I beg you, Sesame, please don't take my sunshine away.
Well, and my response to that is, frankly, dear, I don't give a spam.
That was deep.
Yep.
That was deep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. God. So, yeah, there's a movie we're supposed to talk about. That's what we do on this show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... today I watched this this movie that I was presented... That was presented to me by my co-host here, Sesame.
I like how you make sure to put the onus on me.
Yes, I am. A film that is quite possibly the greatest achievement in animation since Walt Disney made Snow White, you know.
Yep.
Like 80 or 90 years ago or whatever it was. So, yeah, you know. So.
Yep. It's just a riveting masterpiece full of of unexpected turns and surprises and
product placement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lots of decent... Product placement.
There was
yeah.
a lot of product placement, but for some odd reason, I felt like there wasn't enough for the,
well, yeah,
for the
it
concept
was, it's kind
of
weird
the
like
movie.
That. It was, you know, what kind of reminded me of a really low grade version of that. What was the one with like Seth Rogen? It was like Hot Dog Movie or something
like
that.
Or... It was Sausage Party.
Yeah, and yeah. It seems like
that's
which is they probably
a...
got the idea.
Which is getting I believe, on Peacock or something, animated series soon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, follow up. I never saw Sausage Party, so I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't either, but it just seems like they got the idea from this movie to do that.
Seth Rogen ripped off this movie.
I think so. No, it seems like a very similar plot a little bit. I don't know. And,
I'm not saying that because I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but...
Yeah, either have I, so I shouldn't punch.
It would be really funny if this was Seth Rogen's, like, impetus
inspiration
to make
Well,
the movie.
You know what? Because this movie does seem like the kind of movie that you would watch while being high.
Yeah.
And he's always, like, doing it all the time, or like, at least he was.
Basically, every movie Seth Rogen watches is a movie when he's high. So.
Yeah. Actually, I think I read somewhere that he's like cutting back a lot, or maybe that was Kevin Smith.
Well, Kevin Smith gave it up again. So,
okay.
Yeah. It was actually Seth Rogen who got him to do it all the time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, after they did Zach and Mary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But anyways, so this movie, if you want to call it that. It's called Food Fight. Came out in the year 2012, after much delay. Yes, a lot of delay. Much like the delay of Sound of Freedom.
Yeah, God. Don't even know. Don't get the people going to our pages and
I know. Saying stuff. Trying to call me a P word and other things. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, so, please don't poke that bear.
Yeah. But you know what?
No, this
but actually, speaking of bears, I mean, Cocaine Bear was based on a true story, and so was Sound of Freedom. So, I mean, I guess they're in the same genre, right?
Yeah. Events did transpire.
Yes.
And there were people involved in said events.
Yes, who had the same names as people in the movie.
And the countries do exist where things happen. Yes, so it is true.
Yes.
But that's all I'm going to say because I don't want people
I know. But anyways, this movie came out in 2012, as I said. So this movie, I mean, give a little bit of backstory here for it. So after raising tens of millions of dollars in funding, Food Fight had a troubled and much delayed production. The film was originally scheduled for Christmas 2003, almost a full 9 years before it came out.
And that's insane.
However, this failed to materialize, and later planned release dates were also missed. By September of 2011, after producers defaulted on a loan, creditors auctioned off the film's assets and all associated rights to Lionsgate. In 2012, the film had a low-key release, being direct-to-video in most territories. I'm reading all this from Wikipedia, people. This isn't off the top of my head, just letting you know. It's critical.
That was a pretty good rundown.
Yeah. Its critical reception has been overwhelmingly negative, with most criticism directed towards the animation, humor, story, excessive product placement. It's been considered frequently one of the worst films of all time.
Haters, come on.
So basically, one of the things that happened, I wonder if they talk about that on here anywhere. Production setbacks. The film was created and produced by the digital effects shop at Threshold, located in Santa Monica, California, in the Los Angeles area. In December of 2002, Kazanoff, the director of the film, reported that the hard drives containing most of the unfinished assets from the film had been stolen in what he called an act of industrial espionage.
Okay.
I do believe that that's the plot line of like the next Mission Impossible movie. It's
that does sound, because why would someone want to steal the hard drive movie? Like, they thought this is going to be such a smash hit that they gotta like go in and like steal the files from.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I don't know if that's just because they like raised all this money, and part of me thinks that maybe this stuff never existed. They said that there is like a early like trailer with a slightly different animation style. So,
yeah.
So I'm not.
So I wonder.
Yeah, I'm not sure how true this is, but if it is, it is. I honestly think if we could ever find out who stole these hard drives, it would make a better movie than this actual movie.
Oh no, that would be really
like the heist movie of stealing these hard drives.
Yeah, the heist of Food Fight, totally. Yeah. And then But, like, why didn't they do anything with it then? Why didn't they make the movie if that's what they were trying to steal? Like, why would they just sit on it, you know?
Well, I guess, so the definition of industrial espionage is a form of espionage conducted for commercial purposes intended instead of purely national security. While political espionage is conducted or orchestrated by governments, it would be something like if I were able to break into the Coca-Cola vault and get their recipe for their product. That would be considered industrial espionage. Or or like there could also be the aspect that like people were so threatened by this movie that they didn't want it to come out, so they just stole the stuff.
Oh yeah, they're so threatened. Yeah,
you know what I mean? I'm just saying that that might be a version of it, whether it's this movie or because like the original animation style was what was called squash and stretch, which is a Looney Tunes style of animation where it's like you know, like how the Looney Tunes can kind of like move in non-human ways, you know. But then they ended up having to redo the movie in a more motion capture style, so I guess they did a lot of motion capture of people.
I mean, definitely see it.
Yeah, that's why things seem so rigid and weird.
So, my thing, again, I kind of harping back on the espionage thing. So,
yeah,
you know, there's ways, like, if you really need to, like, recover files, like, you can, like, a technician can do that for you. Like, if, like, you, like, if you delete something, you want to get it back, they can find ways to, so it's like, that's not an excuse of, like,
well,
you know.
Well, the main thing of it is, though, is I guess they were only on these hard drives, and the actual hard drives were stolen.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't like they were deleted. They were actually stolen. So,
oh, right, yeah. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha,
so, yeah. So
that
might...
that's why you make backups. Come on, dude.
It's like one of the Toy Story movies. I don't know if it was the first one or the second one. They lost most of the assets to that movie and had to redo it after they had gotten so far because there was a major. They thought they had backed up stuff and they didn't. And then there was like this major thing that happened where everything got erased. So
yeah, then the one woman though saved it. And then they fired her recently, so that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was great. You know.
But that's, you know, that's the industry. Talk about industries right now. Film industry.
Yeah, I mean, as we record this, I don't know when this is going to be released because we've got some episodes in the bank that are coming out first. But this is the day that basically SAG-AFTRA has announced that they are going to be joining the Writers Guild on the picket lines because greedy assholes who make like, you know, $40 million a year can't pay actors what they're worth. Yeah. So
they're doing AI shit.
Yeah, and they're trying to do the one thing I read today was that they want to speaking of motion capture, they want to capture the likeness of background actors and then just be able to use them in perpetuity, like, you know, forever in any project that they deem fit. So You would pay them for one day's work, which is like probably less than $1,000. I mean, I'm at the most. I mean, most I think get like probably about $300 a day. So,
right, and no royalties for future projects.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't Crispin Glover do this with Back to the Future? Didn't he win some case about this where they?
Yeah, but he was
tried to.
But like, he was a main actor in the movie, though.
Okay.
So, it might be different than background actors because, yeah, he was. I mean, if you want to hear more about that story, check out our episode where I interview Jeffrey Weissman, who replaced Crispin in Back to the Future 2 and 3. So, yeah.
Okay.
He's a really, really, really nice guy. And, I mean, it's nothing against him. You know, he was just hired for a job, so.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
And he tells the story about it, and you'll hear things that where he was basically, he thought Crispin was on board with the thing. So he's,
right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they probably, a lot of the actors who, you know, have a conscience and don't want to, you know, do any harm. And they're like, oh, yeah, he's totally cool with it, bro. You know,
yeah.
All that shit. So.
But yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, that did prevent, you know, things from like, you know, I know using like the stars of a movie, like you couldn't, you know, do it without the permission. I mean, like they have, you know, since then, like, you know, they used, you know, digital doubles of like, you know, Peter Cushing for Rogue One, you know, as a Grand Moff Tarkin or whatever. So, you know, it's.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a big deal, too, when they did that.
I mean, it still falls into the uncanny valley there, but it, yeah. But it's getting better, this deep faking and things like that.
I know.
And right now, Bruce Willis, you know, who's sadly going through like a form of dementia and stuff now, he sold his likeness rights to some studio that can now use his likeness rights forever in anything they choose. Basically, I don't know if there's like stipulations or things on it, but I do know that he's already done, they've already done a commercial, I think in Asia or Russia or somewhere, I can't remember, somewhere overseas with his likeness in it.
Shit.
I saw the video and it looks just like him. They got a body double, but then they grafted his face onto the body double.
Sorry, I ate some spicy chicken, so I'm like, that's why I'm clear of my throat.
It's okay.
I apologize to any of our listeners. It reminded me too. So like that thing I sent you earlier about how they took Hassan Piker's voice to do Anti-Hero with Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
and how it sounds almost just like his voice.
Yeah.
I mean, you can sort of tell it's, you know, not completely 100%, but probably around 90% or so, and so like, yeah, they're already doing that with voice.
I listened to a you know, this is months ago. I listened to a song that was Drake and The Weeknd doing a duet together. Sounded just like them.
It's just, I wonder what programs they're using.
I know.
I wanted to try something out, you know.
Yeah.
Do that. I don't know if you got to pay for it, probably.
Oh, I'm sure. If you look online, I'm sure you can find it, but it's scary, man.
You know what? Something, and the thing is, too, is like they're already starting. I know it's kind of a weird tangent here because we're trying to avoid talking about.
Yes, that's true.
but they're you know, they're already starting, I think, draft laws like preemptively, like, you know. Because I hate to say it, because humans are humans, and
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. But you know, pretty soon it's going to show up in pornography. It just is.
Like, oh,
you
know, yeah, I'm not, I know. Saying, you're,
but it's just is. And so,
like, I think I said on like another episode of our show, or said to somebody one time, like, you know, it pretty soon you're going to have the video of Donald Trump having sex with Joe Biden. You know, it's going to happen. You know,
no, totally.
I know.
I know. It's going to be so terrible.
Yeah.
And you know, but like, it's just I mean, I know they already do like deepfakes and stuff, but like, this is gonna be way more than like deepfakes. Like this is gonna look like the actual people. And
that's part of what, like, you know, with the scariness of AI when it comes to writing and acting and music and all that. That's why these people are fighting as part of their deal with it when it comes to the, you know, WGA and SAG-AFTRA and stuff, you know, in these strikes, because they don't want their work being replicated, whether it's their likeness or their words, you know, being replicated in another feature and they don't get paid for it, or a TV show or a podcast or whatever.
Yeah, like, we're going to have to all group together and fight back. Like, we can't have like factionalism at this point, because like, it's gonna get to the point. Like, I remember seeing this meme the other, I don't know, a few months ago, and well, it pops up every now and then, but it basically says something along the lines of like, you know, back in the day they sold automation to us with the idea that the machines would do all of the drudge work that we didn't want to do, and we could like focus our time on like, you know, doing art. But now they got the machines making art and having us do all the shitty jobs, you know, and it's like terrible, you know. Like,
and I mean, the difference is, it's like, you know, the replicated Bruce Willis doesn't have Bruce Willis's soul. The AI written episode of Stranger Things won't have the, you know, same impact as the writers who write it. You know, it's just how it is, you know. Not that they're going to be doing that with Stranger Things, but
I hope not.
That was just the first show that popped in my head, but you know what I mean. It's just like, you know, it's going to be scary, you know, because, you know, like I've said, AI doesn't have, you know,
childhood drama, trauma, you know, it doesn't have,
exactly.
You know, it doesn't have the anxiety of a human. It doesn't have the love or the, you know, caring of a human or the anger of a human or whatever. It doesn't have the soul of a human. It's just,
it's just aggregated information that's then processed and then shot back out. As I remember, the very first thing I ever did with AI was I actually asked AI what I could do for it, because I was afraid that it would take over. So I was like gonna trick it to like, oh well, at least he asked me what he could do for me, so I'm not gonna kill him once I take over. And it was like, oh, like, well, that was my idea behind it. I was like, I'm just gonna like start off with a good foot here, like,
how can I serve you, AI?
Basically, yeah, because then they'll spare me, hopefully. But like, but no, it was basically said something like, oh well, since I'm not a living being, you know, I don't really require needs, or I don't have needs, or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you want to talk about this movie?
So, Food Fight.
Yeah.
2012, man. That's when it finally came out. After all the delays.
But the thing is, the delays actually went back even further, because I was watching a video earlier. It says they came up with this idea in 1997.
Oh yeah, before I'm sure.
Started making it. So 5 years before they even...
Yeah.
So 15 years in the making for this movie. It better be good, Mike. It better be good.
So this was written and directed by, I think, was it written by him? Yeah, it was written by Lawrence Kasdanoff and some other people.
Yes, some other people.
After I talk about how important writers and actors are,
I'm just going to say some other people.
I'll name them off in a second here. But anyway,
I don't know if they want their names mentioned.
I know. But he's an American,
doing them a favor.
American filmmaker who he was a producer on Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Oh, God.
He was executive producer on a bunch of movies in the 80s and early 90s, like You Can't Hurry Love.
Hey.
I don't know what that is. I just
made it up. I saw that one.
Chud 2, Class of 1999, A Gnome Named Gnome, Ghoulies 3. Ghoulies Go to College, True Lies, the James Cameron Arnold Schwarzenegger film.
That's an interesting one to throw in the mix.
There's a 1999 version of Beowulf that he was part of. Strange Days, which was a like neo-punk sort of movie.
I saw the Beowulf one. That was okay.
Yeah, it was with this was the one with Christopher Lambert, I think. Yeah. Mm. Anyways, the Lego Adventures of Clutch Powers, to animated movie, Marvel Superheroes 4D, that he's done like some Mortal Kombat shit for TV, and Lego Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Out in 2012. He hasn't done much. Well, he was an executive producer on the 2021 Mortal Kombat as well. He must have something to do with Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, the animated series is pretty decent for Mortal Kombat. I'm not sure if that's what it was, because they did have a live action one, I think, too. TV series, but.
Yeah, but anyways, the screenplay was written by him as well as Sean Catherine, Derek, Brent Friedman and Rebecca Swanson. The story was by him and Joshua Wexler. Yeah. So, and now we get to our cast.
Oh my God. I thought they were lying.
No.
At the end. I thought it was a joke at first. No, it's not.
So our star who plays Dex Dog Detective.
Hey.
Stupid name. Is Charlie fucking Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
He was really winning this time. Anyway, so he had tiger's blood all through him. It was great. And we got Wayne Brady as Daredevil Dan, his best friend, who is Dex Dog Detective, by the way, is an anthropomorphic dog investigator and owner of the Copa Banana nightclub. Wayne Brady is Daredevil Dan, Dex's best friend, a squirrel pilot of a small aircraft, and a mascot for a chocolate product. Yeah.
Yep. The black best friend type of
stereotype. You
know, I mean, yeah, they're animals in this movie, but that's
stereotype. You know,
that's what he was.
Yeah. It was pretty much like minstrel show kind of thing going on, in my opinion. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was kind of like, it's one of those things that was you saw in the early 2000s, 90s and whatnot.
And then we had Sunshine Goodness, a cat mascot for a raisin brand. But she's like,
why?
But she's a creepier looking cat than the cats in the movie Cats.
No, I was like freaked out when I first saw her, just the way they animated her as well.
Why was she a cat?
I was trying to figure out what the hell was going on, because I thought she was human, but then I saw these cat ears and I was wondering, like, what the hell is that about? Is she just wearing like a thing of cat ears? Like,
no.
And then, like, no, you see whiskers on her cheeks. Like, oh, okay. She's definitely supposed to be a cat, I guess.
Yeah. And she's voiced by Hilary Duff.
Yeah, Hilary freaking Duff. And not only that, Hilary Duff's sister is in the movie as well.
Yeah, Hilary Duff is in there too, as like a couple random voices. She probably just, you know, did it because, you know, and people would know her more from, like, you know, Napoleon Dynamite and stuff.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. Eva Longoria was in this.
Jesus.
As Lady X.
Oh, that was her? Okay. Yeah. All
right. / Priscilla, a former mascot of a prune product turned owner and leader of Brand X.
But you just gave away the plot, Mike. Now no one's going to want to watch it.
I'm sorry. and then you have Larry Miller as Vlad Chocul, a chocolate cereal vampire with an attraction for Dan.
Dan is the... Oh, he's the...
He's Wayne Brady's character.
Yeah, the chocolate brand. This movie's so, like, there's so many racial shit in this movie. Like, I gotta get into the whole,
yeah, and then
so much stuff I need to talk about.
The last big name in the cast here is Christopher Lloyd.
Fucking Lloyd, yes.
As Mr. Clipboard, the robotic representative for Brand X products.
Oh, you gave it away again. We're not supposed to know he's a robot until the end of the movie.
That's okay. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie, you're living a better life than me.
You are. Not only did we watch the movie, we're talking about the movie. So it's like doubly bad. Like,
you've also got like Ed Asner, Jerry Stiller, Chris Kattan.
I know. It's like
Harvey Firestein, Cloris Leachman, Haley Duff, as we said before, Edie McClurg, James Arnold Taylor, who is the voice of fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Clone Wars, Jeff Bennett, Jeff Bergman, both like huge animation voice actors. It's like
that's probably why they raised like $50 million to pay all these people.
I know,
and they didn't have any money left over for the animation, so
it's just crazy.
It is. Yeah, Chris Kattan. I'm not sure who he even played in this.
He was the polar penguin.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and we also have Larry Kasanoff himself as Cheezel T. Weasel.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was a weird character.
So, okay. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go.
Plot.
Is there a plot?
What
fuck
happens in this movie?
Okay, so the plot is both very simple and straightforward, but also convoluted at the same time. So what do I mean by that? So basically, it starts with a really long intro that did not need to be that long whatsoever. Of the store owner turning off the lights that lasts about 5 minutes, and then the lights get turned back on because now the food products and mascots are come to life, and so they're doing their thing. Dog detective Dex you know, is solving one of his cases.
I got a question for you here, really quick, sure, as we're starting this out. I'm sorry. But, so, like, things come to life, but the whole world kind of changes into different things. It's not like in Toy Story where the world is still the same. It's just that Woody and Buzz and all of them come to life.
Right. No, you're right. You
know, like, it's weird.
Like, the landscape changes. Yeah. And, which contradicts itself later on in the movie, but that's fine. And then, because they couldn't, you know, stick to a plot.
No.
And so, yeah, so Dog Detective is, like, saving, like, a basket of kittens from some mouse or some shit. And pops the balloon where they're doing, like, the standoff. He's got, like, a cool, like, grappling hook type of thing where he's, like, swinging off of buildings like a Spider-Man type of character. Which, you know, they stole from Spider-Man, so now he has to pay royalties to Spider-Man for that. But, and then, like, you know, immediately after he saves the kittens, there's already a news reporter who's, like, trying to get, like, a quote from him. Like, I don't know why they were just, like, waiting, like, for that to be done, but okay. And then he's really nervous because he's about to propose to his girlfriend named Sunshine, who, like Mike said, is a mascot for a Raisin brand, well, not Raisin brand cereal, but a brand of raisins, I should say. Don't want to, you know, confuse people here.
No, that would have totally lost me, man. Oh wait,
yeah, and like she's a humanoid cat, which I would say 90% human, 10% cat, honestly, because that's what she looks like to me. The only thing that tipped me off to her being the cat figure was the ears and the whiskers and how she kind of prances around, kind of like how I guess a cat would. I don't know. And
so, then, my theory is that one of her parents was completely human.
Yeah.
The other one was like 25% cat.
So, yeah, we're going into like that kind of interspecies, mating season. I don't know. And then, so he's trying to propose to her. Dan, the daredevil, tries to fly his propeller plane, you know, to make like a message in the clouds type of thing, but then he ends up trying to do a loop-de-loop and ends up making the engine turn off, and he ends up crashing his plane. And Sunshine always wants to help people, so she was trying to help him up, and then she had to go help someone else out, so he didn't have time to propose to her. And then she's like, it's okay, you know, we'll meet up later. But then it says 6 months later and she hasn't returned. So Dex had given up on his detective career, and now he's a club owner of the, what was it called? The banana, or what was it?
Copa Banana.
Yeah. So he's now the owner of a nightclub, which, yeah. Okay. How do you go from detective to nightclub owner? I don't really know. Why,
like, that was like, thing you're living in a fucking grocery store, and
yeah, exactly. So you're living, where do you have the club at? Where is this located? So, and they got these weird, like, there's puns all over the place. Like during the beginning, like they showed like a pun like for kung fu, but said kung tofu instead. Yeah. there's just lots of things like that.
One thing I want to point out that, like, I'm like, who is the audience for this movie, would you think? Is it kids?
I don't think it's kids. I think it was meant, to be like for adults. I really do. Like, I don't know why, but it just seemed like.
Yeah. Cause I don't know what it's rated or anything, but
it just seems like it was meant for adults.
There's some dialogue that, that Daredevil Dan says when he's flying his plane by some attractive woman voiced by Hayley Duff. He said, "How about some chocolate frosting? I'd like to butter your muffin."
Yeah.
I wrote that down just because it was like, did I hear what I just heard?
There's quite a few lines in like innuendos and stuff like that. Yeah, so I think it was meant for adults, or at least young adults. I don't know. But, like, because I remember, like, when I was a kid, regular TV shows, like for, like, nighttime, like, Friday night.
Yeah.
Shows, they were kind of flirting around with the idea of, like, making, like, adult-themed
cartoons, like not pornography, but just like more like racy type of,
yeah,
you know, like plots and like. So I think maybe
like The Simpsons isn't for kids necessarily, and obviously Family Guy and stuff isn't, you know.
No,
so, yeah,
but I don't know. It just seems like it would kind of remind me of like in that kind of vein. I don't know, but and so. We get this weird thing going on where, like, for some reason, see, this is what this, the, I, it's a little confusing about this. So like, apparently, Dex is like an alcoholic, but instead of alcohol, it's milk that he's not supposed to be drinking too much. And I'm like, okay, but then next to him, he's talking to the potato chip dude, and he's like, oh, you shouldn't drink too much potato juice because that's what gets him drunk. So I'm like, okay, so I get it. He's potato chips. So then the thing that gets him drunk is potato juice. Would milk then make the dog?
Dex is a cereal mascot.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess
so. That would probably be. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, that makes sense then. But and so like even before the club scene, there's Christopher Lloyd's character comes in walking all weird and talking weird and. Talking about this brand X bullshit that they're
supposed to
be. Yeah,
until the reveal about his character later, I wasn't sure if it was just bad animation.
That's what I thought at first. It was like, what the hell? Why is he walking so weird? And I always forgot, what is brand X? Was it perfume? What was the product?
It was like everything. It was just like generic, basically.
So it's just brand X. Gotcha.
Yeah, so I'm just looking up. I was curious what the rating of this film is. It's a PG-rated film.
No, that's not. I can't.
And according to like, there's this website called Common Sense Media that like grades films like if they're suitable for children or not and stuff. They say it's ages 10 plus.
No, that's terrible.
I know.
There's so many things in this movie that clearly indicate that they're trying to say something else.
Yeah, I mean, there was always like an animation, like, you know, Bugs Bunny would say something slightly innuendo laden or something, and like Looney Tunes or whoever, Daffy Duck or somebody, you know. But it was just, I don't know. It's just kind of,
I know, but
weird,
you got a movie
this
like
movie.
This where but, you know you got what was the woman's name who was like the spokeswoman for Brand X? What was her name?
Supposed to be. It was like Madame X.
So yeah, there's a scene. Later on, of course, where there's like a big battle going on, there's a scene where Madame X lifts up her leg and it makes it look like a bunch of fighter jets are leaving her, you know, groin area to like, and so come on, like, you know.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I mean, but it's like the animation style, which is obviously not good, but it seems to gear more towards children, though.
The style itself.
It's just weird.
Yeah, totally. It's just what
it's
they
like,
do.
I don't think they knew who the fuck they were making this movie for.
I don't think that they might not even know at this point. And so, like, yeah, this Christopher Lloyd character, dude, he's like walking around, stumbling and shit. And he's like bumbling about this brand X. And like the store owner's freaking out. Like, what the hell is this dude doing? You know? And like, I don't even think he even knew. That's the other thing, too. So, like, could like a person just decide to put product in your store without the store owner giving permission? Like what?
No, you know? I've only worked in like a really big box chain. And I'm assuming that this store is supposed to be something like that because it doesn't look like a mom and pop grocery store, but
no,
I don't know. Maybe it could be, but I don't know. But it's like, even then I'm pretty sure that the owner of the place has to like, you know, contacts, you know, the people that make Mr. Clean, and they're like, hey, we need to order, you know, 20 boxes of your product or whatever. You know, it's like, it's stupid.
Yeah, so this dude, like, he's walking around, and at one point he steps on a bag of chips, and then
also, not to mention that you'd have to buy the product from the distributor.
Exactly, yeah, you would need to buy it
first. Because that's how they make their money. Because you know, you pay Coca-Cola so much money, and then you charge a little bit more money to make your profit. It's how it works.
Yeah, you resell it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I don't know what was going on, and he's like, he was just acting so creepy, man. And then finally, you know, he gets out, and then basically
you know, to speed things up a little bit because there's so many weird shit going on. Madam X basically, like, wants to, like, convert the entire store to Brand X, like, pretty much. And the thing is, too, there's so many weird, like, they're, like, so on the nose for some of these things. Because, for example, so it's called Brand X, and he wants everything to be the same. And at one point, she even starts talking about exterminating undesirables called Ikes.
Yeah, she's totally like Hitler. It's like
the name Ike is important in this. But we'll find out later on. Because at the time I was watching it, I was thinking, but then like no, like afterwards I'm like, okay, that was totally intentional. So like, so they're called Ikes, and they have to exterminate them because they're quote undesirables. These are direct quotes, mind you, this is not me.
Yeah.
Like, she literally called them undesirables that need to be exterminated. And she was trying to seduce Dex here and there to get, like, information from him or get him on her side or whatever. With his, like, detective abilities, I guess, you know, to weed out the undesirables or whatever. Because he's so good at, you know, doing that, apparently. And, which is weird because why would... What good would it be if an entire grocery store only had one product to sell? Like, how would that even help you?
No, I think it's like a brand. Like,
that'll be a brand. Sorry,
but it has different. Like, you know, it's a brand that makes laundry detergent and also makes cereal and also makes this, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm. And so, like, there's like a whole subtext thing here where she had a certain scent, like a perfume that like made like the guys go crazy. And like fight over her, and then it turns out that she was actually taking like the essence from Sunshine because they had kidnapped her. That's why she was gone for 6 months, and they were like converting that into like a perfume to like just drive the men crazy or anyone crazy, I guess, or whatever. And I guess we found that out somehow, even though Sunshine didn't look any different than she did before, but somehow. Dex knew. I don't really know like how he would know, but like and so like there's like this huge battle. I'm just jumping around.
Yeah,
like,
no, you
know,
it's fine because yeah, like,
there's huge battle going on where she somehow got an army already set up, which I don't know how because they didn't exist beforehand, but now they do. And they're like shooting ketchup bottles at people or ketchup at people, and they're like really against sugar, so I thought maybe it's like a health nut type of issue because like anything to do with snacks they were against, I guess, and like wanting to kill them because they were undesirables. And and like I said, at one point she calls for a fleet of fighter jets to fly and kill people, but then it looks like they're coming out of her, you know, she lifts her leg up and they're. Anyway, I don't know why they were doing that. I thought that was a cool thing to do, I guess.
Most women can do that, right?
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know much about... I don't know anything about women, so I wasn't sure.
Well, I don't know anything about, like, those kind of women, you know, but, like, animated women who lift their legs up and then have fire jets come out. But, like, I don't know much about that.
I was going to say, none of the women I've known personally in my life have ever been able to do that, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's a gift. I mean, that's definitely something. But I think it would be kind of painful, you know, on both ends, really, at that point.
Probably worse than childbirth, I think.
I would say so. I mean, I think it's painful for her and also anyone who might be, you know, making love. So I think it's a bad situation all around. But anyway, you know, to each their own. But you talk about, you know, ages 10 and up, are you kidding me? Then there's another scene where she like literally like lifts her leg up and puts it on Dex's shoulder and like dancing like really seductively with them, and you know, it's just like really. And I don't know, man. And then and so, you know, I'm forgetting so much.
Yeah, but basically we have our happy ending.
But the thing is, though, so the happy ending, though, is that they finally get married, and they start playing, like, the Jewish wedding music, and they're like, oh, I didn't know Dex was Jewish or whoever. They're like, oh, I guess so. So wait a minute. So we have a fascist regime that's trying to exterminate, quote, Ikes.
Yeah.
I wonder what that sounds like. Maybe a missing letter here and there.
Maybe one that was adopted by a group that has three of those in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The three Gibbos, yeah, letters. And then, of course, this is a fascistic regime. Like, I mean, clearly, they're talking about exterminating undesirables. And then later on, the main character's Jewish. I'm like, man, like, that's really on the nose. Because at first, I was like, well, maybe I'm reading into it. They're calling them Ikes. But then it was like, no, the character's Jewish. I'm like, damn, like, wow. Like, no wonder why it didn't get good reception. Like, that's
just weird because Charlie Sheen is an Hispanic Irish Catholic, but
well, yeah, because he comes from the Martin Sheen,
the Estevez family. Yeah,
I think he wants to use his actual given name now, Martin Sheen. I think because
he said he regrets changing his name back.
Yeah, sorry, he regrets not using it.
Did you know where he got his last name?
Yeah, because
Bishop Fulton Sheen.
His grandfather was a resistant fighter during the fascist regime in Spain, wasn't he?
Yeah, but no, he got his name from Bishop Fulton Sheen, who was a TV priest.
Yeah,
that this is a side note here to the people listening, but he used to be on like TV really late at night, and Sesame and I would watch it sometimes. So
sometimes we would just watch his sermons, or not really sermons, like just his whatever, his presentations. Yeah, and that's hilarious. So that's how he got his name. Okay,
that's how he chose his last name. Yeah, but and then Charlie followed suit with his dad, whereas Emilio didn't.
Which is really interesting. Because
Charlie's real name is Carlos Estevez. So. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting too. Like, talk about Martin Sheen here. Sometimes, things really do kind of pass down from family history without even really knowing it. Like, sometimes, quote, it really isn't your blood or whatever. Because, Martin Sheen's very political and he's never shied away from that fact.
Yeah.
And then turns out, he didn't even notice because he went to like one of those like who do you think you are type of shows or whatever, and it found out that I think one of his grandfather's relatives was a resistance fighter in Spain against the Francoist fascist regime. He was part of the anarchist Republican back then. Republican meant something different.
Yeah.
In Spain. I'm just saying words change meaning depending on what country you're in. And, so he was part of the Republican/anarchist sort of like. We grouped together resistance against the fascists in Spain. And then the Irish side, that relative was also a resistance fighter against whatever,
Yeah. So,
and of course, he's political, but he didn't know these people. He didn't know they existed until after all. So,
Martin Sheen went on to play the greatest president in the history of the United States, who was sadly fictional.
Exactly. Yeah, sadly not a real person.
No.
But yeah, West Wing, that's a great show.
Yeah. I love that show. Anyways, basically we find out at the end that that this Madame X was actually this Priscilla Prune or something who was on the shelf next to Sunshine all these years, and everybody was buying the raisins, but nobody was buying her extra large prunes. Yeah.
And so she was jealous.
So she was jealous. So her whole thing was to steal her and kidnap her and all that stuff. And the reason she looked so different was because she went somewhere and got plastic surgery.
Yeah. Brazil, which was random. Okay.
And I'm still trying to figure out how all this, I don't get how any of this makes any fucking sense whatsoever, because it's like a fucking fever dream, Matt.
It's literally a fever dream. It's something I would watch or think about while having a fever, because they live in a fucking grocery store, like you said, but yet somehow her as a product mascot was able to go to Brazil. And
exactly.
How would that work out? Or maybe it's a grocery store churn into its own world, so there's like Brazil within the grocery store.
And then she went to Brazil, I guess.
My confusion here is, okay, they're mascots. They're like on the packaging. Do they, exactly. They don't show them come to life. Do they peel off of the packaging and then become like sentient? Or what happens? And like, they're not on just one package. So I'm assuming there's like several boxes of the cereal that Dex is on.
So which one is, how do they decide which one is the real Dex then? Yeah, like,
it doesn't make sense and it hurts my brain. I'm going to cry. At one point,
in order to save the day, they have to go outside during the daytime, which is like, that's, they're forbidden to, because whatever, because people will see them, I guess. And then, and so how is this happening though?
Like, they can talk to the computer. The IBM computer comes to life and it's like a mascot of the IBM logo or something comes off and is alive.
I don't like it.
There's no logic.
There's none. And my whole thing is, I don't know. I read
a quote from the creator of the movie who said that he intended this movie to be Who Framed Roger Rabbit meets Toy Story in a supermarket.
Actually, that kind of makes sense.
The only thing I find in connection there is the fact that Christopher Lloyd is in both Who Framed Roger Rabbit and this movie. So it's just
like... I guess that movie kind of had its own surreal kind of character to it.
It was more adult themed, but
because
I mean I don't think definitely. I mean, the thing is, it's like even Disney, who made Who Framed Roger Rabbit, has like shied away from a lot of the elements of the movie in there. Like, there's a Who Framed Roger Rabbit ride at one of the parks, and they've covered up, they put a jacket on Jessica Rabbit so she doesn't have cleavage.
Oh man.
And other things. And like, there was a scene in the movie where she was like tied up into the trunk of a car, and on the ride they redid that, but now she's not in the trunk anymore. Something else is.
Jesus.
So it's like,
Jessica Rabbit was hot though, like super hot.
Yeah, as a cartoon, like, yeah, definitely.
But crazy though, like I remember as a kid, even I was like, this woman's supposed to be hot. I don't know why. I guess I don't have those feelings right now, but I know she's supposed to be. Like, I mean, like it's one of those things. Like, yeah, I know. I don't know why, but you know.
But I'm attracted to some ink and paper. Well,
no, it's not that I was. It was, I know that, like,
you know, she's supposed to be attractive, and I mean, not I guess the like whole like detective thing is similar to like Eddie Valiant in that movie and stuff, and then the people coming to life is similar to Toy Story, but it's like taking all of that and then putting it into a blender, and then drinking it, and then vomiting it up later.
And then drinking it, and then putting like a bunch of drugs into it, and then having like hallucinations of beavers while watching it, and then trying to come up with an interpretation about what you just watched.
I mean,
that makes any sense at all.
I know it's not true, but the movie seems like it was written by ChatGPT.
It was before that time, but I can see. Actually, I'm gonna probably go in after we get done, and I'm gonna basically tell it to rewrite Food Fight. And see.
No, what you should do is tell it to write a movie that is Who Framed Roger Rabbit meets Toy Story in a supermarket, and see what you get.
Yeah, I probably get Food Fight. Can you tell it to write a whole script or just a scene?
I think you have to like pay money for like more, but I don't know how it works. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, just, you can have it write a short film based on that and see what it comes up with.
I will. We'll
report on our next episode after this, folks, what Sesame comes up with on that.
But okay. Yeah. That sounds fun actually. Yeah.
Do you have
that sounds better than this. fucking movie.
Do you have anything else to say about this before we wrap things up?
No, just other than, like, if you're gonna do a movie about, like, a character trying to commit genocide, maybe, you know, don't call your undesirables Ikes and then have the main character be Jewish at the end. I think that's a fair thing not to do. I'm just saying, like, come on. Because there's no other reason to call them Ikes. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, why are they called Ikes? What is, like, why? Like, I was trying to figure out,
it,
like...
Was it an abbreviation for something, or...
Maybe
or,
I
like,
just
an anagram
it,
or anything?
So,
yeah.
Maybe I was just so tranced out, maybe I missed it, but...
I literally fell asleep watching the movie, and then woke back up. And...
I had to watch it in three different...
And then I was really tired because I got up early today and watched it. And then I went back to sleep after I watched the movie, which was a mistake. Because I had some funky dreams.
Yeah. I'm sure you did.
But I do want to say one thing here before we wrap things up. There's this guy, Nathan Raven, who wrote for the AV Club in 2013 about this movie. One of the things he says is, this is one of those fall of civilization moments. The grotesque ugliness of the animation alone would be a deal breaker, even if the film weren't so also glaringly inappropriate in its sexuality, nightmare inducing in its animation, and filled with Nazi overtones and iconography, even more egregiously unfit for children than the script's wall-to-wall gauntlet of crude double entendres and weird imitations of interspecies sex. He revisited the film again in 2019 for an article and says, it was the kind of bad movie I lived for. So,
okay.
Yeah, just, and, that I lived for. This is the kind of movie so unbelievably surreally and, exquisitely terrible that you want to share it with the rest of the world. I was put on Earth to suffer through abominations like food fight so that society as a whole might benefit from my Christ-like sacrifice.
Yes. Yes. True.
Yeah, and then Tom Nicholson from Esquire said that the film was The Room rendered in horribly sharp polygons, and it was easily the most horrifically ugly, confusing, and unsettling animated film ever made.
You know,
he obviously hasn't seen Thieving, but
I was just gonna. Yeah, it's no Thieving, but it's up there in its beauty. I would say
as far as feature length films go, it is definitely. But
because I am definitely a Thieving stan, and I will defend Thieving to the ends of the earth. Much like how Thieving tries to find his whatever, and then he gets pushed back in time and then kills himself by drowning himself in the ocean, apparently. And then, so I will definitely defend, you know, Thieving over this movie. But,
anyways, I think that's all I have to say about it. So, folks, do me a huge favor, go to all2real2.com and subscribe to our show at any of the, you know, links to any podcast app you want to. It helps our show grow. Share the show on social media, whether it be the Facebook or the Threads or the TikToks or the Twitters and the Friendster or the MySpace or the College Meet, or if you want to just like share us on like Tinder. I mean, I'm fine with that too. Sure. You know, just put it in your dating app profile. Be like, you know, I like to, you know, take long walks on the beach. I like to, you know, read sci-fi novels, and I like to listen to All Too Real Too. You know, just put that out there. That's all. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyways, until next time, folks. Just remember that life is not as frightening as the movie Food Fight.
It's true.
And even though it seems like it at times. And just remember that I love you. And Sesame loves you. And until next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.